Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Mark Gaffney, president of the Michigan AFL-CIO, is going to talk about what went on today in Michigan. This really, I got to be honest, this imperialistic rule that seems to be going on there. The fact that I guess Governor Snyder wants to be king, imperial ruler, if you will, the grand wizard, the grand master, the grand poobah, I guess. He wants to be able to come in and dictate everything. Throw out contracts, destroy contracts, destroy precedent, destroy agencies, take over, and basically my way or the highway. But we really are seeing the Republican way. And it's not democratic. You know, they love to talk about, you know, the secret ballot when it has to do with union workers collectively bargaining, wanting to join and form a union. Boy, that's so important. But when it comes to honoring contracts and, you know, in governing, oh, that whole democratic process is, yeah, it's overblown. So we'll talk to Mark Gaffney about that. Amazing stuff. And in the second hour, our good friend Irwin Aronson will be here to go over some of the stuff that's been going on here in the state of Pennsylvania, the massive cuts to education that are coming down the pike. Although you're hearing the undercurrent of legislators going, I can't go home and sell this to my people. I can't go home to my constituents and say, we're going to cut $1 billion from education. We're going to cut over 50% of the higher education budget. I can't go home and tell them that. But that's exactly what you've got a whole bunch of these governors across the country doing. And Think Progress has done a real nice job of bringing together 12 states, 12 Republican states that have followed the Corbett, Walker, Kasich, Christie, Snyder, Scott, you name it. They've followed this. I'm going to call it the Heritage Plan, because I'm sure it came out of the Heritage Foundation or one of those little tinky tanks where they've been congregating amongst themselves and whispering like little schoolgirls about, oh, when we take over, oh, boy, we're going to do this. And oh, won't it be wonderful? Oh, can't wait. Well, now they have the power, and they are marching in lockstep as a good right-leaning organization would do. And you go through some of the states. I mean, you look at New Jersey, for instance, where Tom Corbett says, you know, that's the guy I'd like to model myself. That's the guy I like. Chris Christie's a good guy. What did he do? He raised taxes on the poor, the working poor and the middle class, by cutting the earned income tax credit, which, you know, it used to be both parties were fully in favor of the earned income tax credit. Why? Because it got people worked, and it was rewarding work, and it helps small businesses who couldn't pay higher wages. So you could have minimum wage employees, and the government was subsidizing them. Now, there are some who, like, you know, I kind of wonder about that. Does that hurt a bigger, a better employer who wants to do the right thing, who wants to pay better wages? I kind of think so, but that's not their rationale. Their rationale is just chop them off and we don't care. Also, you got Christie who cut the homestead rebates. But he did find a whole boatload of money to hand out to lucrative corporate tax cuts, just like here. In fact, this year's budget calls for about $200 million in business tax cuts. While they're cutting mental health services, they're cutting Medicaid, and they're withholding property tax rebates from seniors. Now, all of this is on the premise of we have to do this because those greedy state workers, they're not going to give up the money for their health care, and they're not going to give up the money for their pensions, so we're going to steal it from the working class, which is a nice ploy because it does a real nice job of separating them and pitting worker against worker. I mean, these people aren't stupid. The Tinky Tank has figured this stuff out. They know how to keep us at each other's throats. But again, you know, what they did is they cut programs, cut taxes for the wealthy, and in fact would not even consider a millionaire's tax. And then you hit over to Michigan, where Rick Snyder, his budget, their already regressive tax system, is going to get even worse. He plans on cutting the business tax by more than 86% while slashing $1.2 billion from schools and universities. So again, we're handing all this money off to big business in the hopes that, please create a job, just one. And we're underfunding education. So the question is what jobs are you going to get if you don't have an educated workforce? You go to Georgia. Last week, the Georgia House passed an austerity bill that will increase health insurance costs by more than 20% for state workers, teachers, and retirees, and going to cut off funding for state universities. Kiss that $75 million goodbye. The Georgia House has already gutted the state's HOPE scholarship program. Now it's considering a new tax system that's going to lower the income taxes for the very wealthy and raise sales tax on basic needs like food and clothing. Stuff that we here in Pennsylvania have said, you know what, we're not going to tax that because it disproportionately hurts those who aren't making a whole bunch of money. Also, in Georgia, they want to implement this bizarre flat tax rate so they can cut the corporate tax rates again. In Florida, we've been talking about Florida for the longest time. The Tea Party Twizzler candidate, Rick Scott, his budget, doing away with corporate income taxes, laying off almost 7,000 state workers, cutting education by almost $5 billion, cutting Medicaid by almost $4 billion, slash and burn for the folks at the bottom. Big cuts for the people at the top. Kasich in Ohio, he's talking about cutting 25% of the school budget, cutting $1 million from food banks, $12 million from children's hospitals, almost $16 million from an adoption program that you would think he would be in favor of, especially kids with special needs. One of Kasich's staffers revealed the other day that these cuts are more about politics than about balancing the budget. And I said, really, you're willing to come out and be that bold? He told the Cincinnati Dispatch that even if there weren't an $8 billion deficit, we'd probably be proposing many of the same things. Again, what they're going to do, they're going to cut taxes for the oil companies, for the gas companies. So it's a race to the bottom. And who loses? The working people of the state of Ohio, just like in Florida, just like in Georgia, just like in New Jersey. And they got another in Iowa. You got another Republican governor proposing that $200 million in commercial property taxes and freeze school spending. Cut $42 million from state universities, and time again. Maine doing the same thing, Wisconsin doing the same thing, South Carolina, Kansas, Arizona, you name the state. They're all reading off the same book. And right here, you know, we've got a governor who's saying, you know, we're going to lay off 1,500 workers. We're going to cut education by $1 billion. We're going to cut higher education by 53%. But we're not going to go after the Delaware loophole. We're not going to make corporations pay their fair share. We're not going to go after the drilling people. We're going to let them, whatever they want. We're going to give them whatever they want. In fact, we're going to violate our own rules and pretty much take the EPA out of this whole thing so that we can speed those licenses. We can get those licenses into the people's hands faster and they can drill quicker. Does that make sense to you? I mean, is this how we want to run our state? Is this how we run the country? Because I guess the question I have is when you start looking at what we're going to be in a couple of years, where we're basically walking away from our children's future, so that right now, maybe in the hopes of, oh, please, Mr. Corporation, please, won't you create a job? I guess like they say, wish in one hand and it in another, and see which one fills up first. Because I think we're getting trickled on, and not in a good way. This has not worked. So I say, you know, when these legislators come home to their districts, you have got to contact them. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on in this. This kind of deep, drastic, painful cut for the folks at the bottom while handing away the wealth and riches of the state just doesn't make an awful lot of sense on any level. And you look at the election yesterday of Judy Schwenk, and to me, she won by 15 points, which it was not. Early polling had her up by 2 or 3, maybe 5. She came out 15 points up. You know, you look at this and you go, exactly what message was sent. And what I'm saying is, what this is about is people are ticked off about Corbett's budget proposal. They, I hope, realize that by cutting from education and cutting from programs to help the ill and downtrodden, kicking 42,000 people off of adult basic insurance, that you're creating an environment where there's no safety net. And then handing that wealth to those who are already doing pretty well is just wrongheaded. And I think most people realize at the end of it, those of us at the bottom of the hill, when it starts rolling down, we're the ones going to pay the freight. So to keep this bizarre tax pledge that our governor has taken, we're going to see massive increases in property tax, or we're going to see schools that no longer look like the schools that I remember. And that is a tragedy. An absolute tragedy. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Michigan AFL-CIO President Mark Gaffney about what his governor, Mr. Snyder, is doing there in the great state of Michigan. And, wow, amazing stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republicans controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Managers Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while increasing personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency managers bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, I thought when we were in Wisconsin, and, you know, again, to me, one of those moments in my life that I see as almost a religious experience, restored my faith in humanity, the fact that people can come together and people can support each other, even if they're not directly affected by what's going on. And that's what I learned in Wisconsin. But I was hoping that by having those massive protests, that by taking Walker on in Wisconsin and going after that, that maybe we would slow down, stymie some of the attacks moving across the country. In some cases that has happened, but Michigan is not one of those states. And some just insanity going on there. That's why I've asked Mark Gaffney. He's the president of the Michigan AFL-CIO. MIAFLCIO.org is their website. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you for having me aboard.
You know, explain this to me in a nutshell. As I understand this, this is basically, you've now, instead of a governor, you've got a king.
Well, the governor, of course, appointed the state treasurer, and the state treasurer has this authority now to train and appoint what's called emergency managers. They were calling them emergency financial managers, but they dropped that because it was a little controversial, and in the case of school districts, they decided to give them complete control over academics as well. So we're going to train, as you said, 50, 60 of these people. We may need 200. And we're going to send them into cities and school districts that are, quote-unquote, bankrupt. Now, in addition to that, the governor is going to cut revenue sharing. That's money the state sends cities by one-third. He's going to cut education funding by $470 per student. So he's going to put more cities and more school districts into the quote-unquote bankruptcy status. It's very easy to fall into this status. You miss one payment to your pension fund, and there's a host of other things, about a dozen different things. And away you go. You get an emergency financial manager. They fire the city council. They fire the school board. Now, they don't take them out of office. They're still a school board member, but they don't meet. They don't make decisions. They have no authority over the budget. If a citizen complains to them or asks a question, they have no way of running that complaint through or getting the answer. This financial manager can cancel every single contract, every contract, not just the collective bargaining agreement. That's bad enough, of course. But they cancel everything, and then they can make the decision, one person, not from that city, not from that school board, whether they'll be busing, whether they'll be athletics, or whether they'll be any other types of programs. And, of course, the manager can give all of the contracts from the city, snow plowing, garbage, whatever, to his or her relatives.
Nice.
No transparency, no checks and balance.
Well, that sounds very efficient, actually.
It's about as efficient as Hitler and Mussolini.
What happened to the democratic process? I mean, you know, when we were talking in this program, we talked extensively about the Employee Free Choice Act. All I heard from the insane radical right was this: "Well, you're destroying the democratic process." This not only destroys it; it completely eviscerates any remnant of democracy.
Let me ask you a question. How many years do you think this financial manager is allowed to stay in a city or a school? Take a guess.
10 years.
Well, five. 5 years. Yep.
That, to me, just, and they can set aside every contract. Doesn't matter.
Every single contract. And if they, look, are these guys going to give all the contracts to their relatives? Probably not. But the way the legislation is written, they can.
Well, I think it'll be worse.
Do anything about it.
I think it'll be worse than that, Mark Gaffney. I think it'll go up to the highest bidder who puts money into their campaign funds. This,
well,
to me, goes back
that.
To
that. These financial managers will get hired at these companies. You know, you have multinational corporations in this business now. First Student, School Busing, they're from Europe. Sodexo, they're from Europe. And so, yeah, of course, emergency financial manager, couple of cities, lots of contracts. They'll get a sweet job with the people that they contracted to.
Is this constitutional?
We don't know, but we're darn well going to find out, aren't we?
I mean, because at the end of this, then what you're telling me is if a state can set aside all their contracts, then maybe, you know, me, I can set aside my contract with my credit card company, with my bank, and with the other folks that I have financial contracts with. I can just set those aside and say, you know what, I'm changing the terms.
Well, and to do that, you'd have to declare bankruptcy, and this is a very similar process to bankruptcy. Yep.
This is insane. So today I understand you guys had some actions in your capital?
Oh, only about 8,000 of us. 8,000 people came to Lansing today. We actually planned, this worked out really well, Rick, and I refer it to all of your listeners to think about whether this would work in your state or not. You know, workers get off work at different times, first shift, second shift, school teachers. So we had a rally today from 12 noon to 5:30 in the afternoon. We had speeches and a program at noon, at 2, and at 4:30. And in between noon and 2 and 2 and 4:30, we marched right on inside the Capitol and made our voices heard. And so, of course, you know, you'd run the program till about 12:45, go into the Capitol, come back out for the 2 o'clock speeches. It worked out really well. A lot of people had a great time, bit of a party, but the most important thing was we made our voices heard.
You know, I look at this, and T, the scary part of this is how uniform each state seems to be following the same basic playbook. We were in Wisconsin for a week following that. Ohio, my home state, you know, moving kind of in the same path. Pennsylvania, kind of talking about the same thing. New Jersey, Michigan, all these states seem to be moving in this very corporate direction.
It's very scary. Let's be real, real serious for a minute. All of these Republican legislators have a group that helps them write this legislation. Who is this group and who are the people that come together? A host of corporate attorneys. So that's why it's heavy on privatization. That's why it's heavy on enormous tax cuts. That's why it's heavy on shifting the tax burden over to individuals and the middle class. And that's why, as you point out, it is. It not only seems or looks as if it is the same agenda in state after state after state. This is a right-wing movement, and they gained enormous advantage in the 2010 elections. I think they were surprised themselves by how well it ended up for them, and now they're going after as much as they can. And look, who's in their way? Who is the first group to stand up and say, you cannot sell off the bus system in this school?
Well,
the public sector union.
Well, union thugs like you, Mark.
After us.
Union thugs like you.
Yeah, well, and all of my public sector friends, that's right.
You know, I went to, we took the crew out to Madison for a week, and we, I'm a 21-year member of the Teamster Union. You know, I'm not adverse to, you know, a little chaos every once in a while. I was going looking for chaos. I was looking for riots. I was looking for the, my fellow union thugs. And in Madison, all I came across were old ladies with cookies and people handing out sweet potatoes.
And, you know, we had a lot of college kids today. Great to have them. I looked out across that crowd. There was a lot of pensioners, a lot of little old ladies, a lot of union members. What this agenda, this right-wing agenda that is flooding the whole Midwest, couple of states in the Northeast, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Missouri, Iowa. This whole agenda is pissing off a lot of different types of people. And so that's going to be our strength. Look, the labor movement can get this ball rolling, but the success is going to come from regular people, students, retirees, folks that are just saying, wait a minute, the Republicans are going too far.
Well, I mean, this idea that we're going to run business, we're going to run government like a business. And I don't think what folks understood during the 2010 election cycle, when every one of these governors said, we need to be more business friendly, we need to run government more like business, that meant destroying people's wages, cutting jobs, taking away workers' rights, cutting taxes for businesses. I don't think that the majority of voters really got that. But I gotta be honest, I think they're waking up.
I agree. I think that what they thought they were buying with this election was efficiency. I thought, you know, they think they were buying a cool level head looking at the issues. And guess what? The Republican Party shows that they haven't changed and they may never change. And all this stuff coming out is very, very political, very, very slanted ideologically. And that's why the issues are privatization, at least in Michigan, taxing pensions, moving money from the middle class to the wealthy, 60% drop in business taxes. That's what our governor has proposed. And to pay for it, ending the earned income tax credit for the working poor. Working poor get a $300 to about $800 tax credit, depending how much they make. That would disappear to pay for the 60% decrease in business taxes.
That's enough to pay for, country club fees for a couple of weeks.
Isn't that something?
Well, you said something a second ago that caught my ear. You said that they thought that government would run more efficient. I think it has run more efficient. Rules be damned, democracy, the constituents be damned. We have an agenda. You look at Wisconsin, they have an agenda, and the rules, all they had to do was wait 24 hours. They couldn't even follow that rule. And they steamrolled their ideology down the throats of the citizens of that state.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's what we're seeing here. This stuff is moving just so fast. Not only does the general public not know what's in it, but the unions that are impacted have a hard time keeping up with it. I've never seen the Democrats act this way, even when they had a majority. Somebody said to me, well, this is what President Obama did with health care.
No,
it's not at all. Health care was a very long debate. In the end, that vote for it was along party lines. That's true. But it was a very long debate. Here we hold one hearing and pass the bill.
Yep. And I said, you know, I said the Democrats are going to learn what they should have done when they had power in 2009.
I guess so. I suppose we're going to have to learn some lessons. I hate to think that's the way legislators and government should work, but the Republicans are writing the playbook.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question I've got for you. I appreciate your time and the fight that you guys are putting up there. You know, what What words do you give to the folks here in Pennsylvania who haven't yet seen this level of attack? I think this governor's a little smarter than maybe Walker and maybe even Snyder by just saying, you know, hey, I'm just going to let them take the heat. But what do you say to the folks here? Because it's coming. What do you say to the folks here?
The first thing I say is hello to all my friends, Richie Bloomingdale and the rest of them in the AFL-CIO. We have been struggling with that exact question. Is this governor more moderate? Are there moderates in the legislature we can work with? And by golly, every time we test this question so far, we've been disappointed. So we're going to continue for a little while longer, try to get along with these folks, but they're going to set the stage. They're going to make the call. We want to work out these details of legislation. We understand they have the majority vote, so stuff is going to pass. But look, the process is we want to amend it to make it make sense. We want to amend it to make it make sense for workers and employers. And if they're just going to run an ideological assault fast, well, we're going to have to respond with 8,000 people on the Capitol lawn day after day. It's really going to be their call. They will set the tone.
All right. Frank, Mark Gaffney, I appreciate your time. Michigan AFL-CIO president, miaflcio.org, the website. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Mark, thank you so much for your time. Keep up the fight, brother.
Thank you. Thanks for having me with you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
In American politics, the past not only sticks with us, but it often provides the best definition of what's going on in the politics of the present. So it can be useful to revisit some powerful words from our history. Today's media and political powers, for example, keep using the word conservatism to describe current political trends in our democratic republic. Poor choice of words. From the Koch brothers to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from GOP House Speaker John Boehner to such anti-worker governors as Walker of Wisconsin, an autocratic power grab is underway to enthrone corporate power and moneyed elites to rule unilaterally over our government, economy, and environment. Nothing conservative about that. Rather, a word from America's past best describes their goal, plutocracy. It is the direct opposite of democracy, which is government by the many, by all of the people, by us. Plutocracy, on the other hand, is government by the wealthy, by them and for them. The struggle between democracy and plutocracy has defined our political history from the Revolution of 1776 forward. And now, here we go again. Wall Street banksters, corporate chieftains, speculators, and other pampered plutocrats are out to crush the hard-won laws, rules, institutions, and social compacts that we, the people, have struggled to put in place over the years to undergird our people's democratic authority. Busting unions, unleashing corporate money in politics, restricting access to courts, gutting financial and environmental regulation, all of these and more are about supplanting our democracy with their plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, call them what they are, not conservatives, but self-serving plutocrats. Or nail them with another good word from the past, kleptocrats, government by thieves.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
You know, and listening to that song, I got to be honest with you, I wish someone would tell the Republicans that that's satire. The guy didn't mean it, but that seems to be the game plan, folks. That seems to be it in a nutshell. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Jim on line two. How are we doing tonight, Jim?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
I'm just first time driving through the turnpike here and catching a radio station, and I'm just actually laughing at I got a couple minutes of hearing of your view on the economic status, and I mean it's kind of laughable. I'm really just trying to get a grasp on how you're viewing this politics. It just basically sounds like redistribution of the wealth and class warfare. I'm trying to figure out your whole mentality.
Do you not think that the wealth has been redistributed already?
In what way?
Well, in the fact that wages that used to go to workers are now going to investors and to CEOs. Wages that used to be earned by people who drove a truck for a living are now being put into the hands of the investor class. Are you not paying attention to the distribution of wealth in this country and how one-sided it has become?
If anything, it is one-sided. It's actually against the business people. I mean, these states are actually suffering, and they're wondering why the businesses aren't coming to their states. They're the union dominated states, and they're the biggest, anti business states. You know, they drive the states out, and they want to tax the businessmen to death, and then they wonder why there's no jobs. It's comical in a way. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't so serious.
So here in the state of Pennsylvania, where 75% of the corporations pay zero taxes, is that too high for you?
No, that's incorrect.
No, it's not incorrect. I mean, even Republicans use that number because we have a system where you can open a P.O. box in the state of Delaware and funnel all your profits through. So before you go cocking off on something, maybe you should know what you're talking about.
The tax percentage is actually disproportionate. I mean, the poorest people pay 10%, whereas the richest actually pay 35%.
Well,
I mean,
because
people actually that pay, that receive more in the tax refund from the government than they actually pay into it.
Well,
so, I mean, that's basically redistribution of the wealth.
And you don't see that in this country we've had a massive redistribution of wealth from those who create the wealth to those who sit on their yachts and collect dividends checks. All right, well, it's a basic disagreement, Jim. I appreciate the call. I got to move along. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Let's go to line one. We've got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Oh, my God, another Republicarch. That's what I call him.
Well, you know.
Look, dude. Your effective tax rate is lower at any time in this country since 1950. You have seen the upper 5%, actually the upper 1%, have went from, according to David Stockman, Ronald Reagan's budget director, back in 1986 they controlled $8 trillion worth of wealth, and now they control $48 trillion worth of wealth. Okay? If you look at the effective tax rate with the loopholes and the ways they've got to run and get away from it, they're making tons of money. They're the only ones that have made money in the last 10 years. You've had these tax breaks, and they promised to create jobs, and they created nothing. Nothing.
Yep.
And by the way, I don't know what your job is, but you know what? If you're thinking that the teachers are making too much money and your firefighters are making too much money, et cetera, you know what? Why don't you take a cut, pal?
Or go be a teacher or a firefighter.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I mean, for God's sakes, y'all need to, you know, listen, get up off the Fox boobs and lay off the Rush Limbaugh and the Sean Hannity and the stupid garbage. And actually look at the facts, and the facts will tell you the middle class is going down in flames, and we're getting hit, we're getting hurt, and we're getting beat, whether it's open borders or whether it's outsourcing your job. And if you don't understand, the oligarchs will bleed your bones, boy. Don't you understand?
No, Ike, it's those union thugs, it's those union people who demand that they have health care, and they want pensions. How dare they?
Yeah. And by the way, let me address that. Look here, pal. Here's another thing. You know what? Do you want your bridges built? Do you want your bridges, maintenance to the point that they don't fall down and kill people like they did in Minnesota? Do you want your teachers to teach your kids? Do you want your kids babysitted? That's what you're paying for. I mean, do you want your house fire put out? I mean, what do you expect? I mean, for God's sakes, Well, let me ask you this, pal. The last guy on the line, let me ask you this. Do you think that you're worth everything that you're making? And by the way, let me ask you this. Do you think that that employer that employs you, does he make the money or do you make the money for him? Because he could.
I'm losing you, Ike. Sorry, I'm losing you, Ike. I appreciate the call, though, brother. I'm right there with you, right there with you. Let's go to line three. We got Helen on line three. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
Hi, dear. I heard Mr. Conklin last night talking about what the vouchers are going to do for his area where there are no private schools, and where are people going to go if there's no private schools and there's, they can't just switch around to someplace else. I thought y'all would like to know, last Saturday I went down to see my grandkids, and as I have mentioned before, they're going to a cyber school. Dennis Tooley Cyber School, Commonwealth Connections. My youngest granddaughter is 8 years old, and the teachers have not taught her to read. She read three words on three pages, and that was all she could read.
Really?
This is my grandkid. I'm like, all the rest of them are reading. I was flabbergasted. I didn't say anything, but I mean, this is what we get. Dennis was on Bob Durbin saying that he takes the children that are not so bright. Well, yeah, I know why, because if you have a child that is in need of an IEP, you get paid more money in the public system. So he's got them in his school. He's making more money. And if he doesn't teach a child, then that child is going to get an IEP because they can say that she's retarded. Maybe she's not, but he's still going to get more money. So that's what they're doing with this. They will take any of these children, troubled children, anything, because they make more money with those children. And I was just flabbergasted. I wanted to tell everybody. Whether it's the charter schools, cyber schools, they're all like the vouchers. The Republicans have figured out how to make money.
And that's all it's about. It's about privatizing.
That's
what is
all it's about. It's not about the children.
I could care less. Helen, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it's about. I mean, and that's the end game here. When I come back, I do want to specifically address this whole redistribution of wealth thing. And I think this bill that Jan Schakowsky's put forward, I think is a step in the right direction and will drive our caller Jim completely off the deep end. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are right back after this.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith,
executive director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
You
Has that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm grocery and I hate it. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast. It's there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, your convenience. Our good friend Jan Schakowsky, she's a congresswoman from Illinois, been on this program in the past. She's proposing a piece of legislation called the Fairness in Taxation Act. This is going to raise taxes for the millionaire class. If you make over $1 million a year, between 1 and 10, I'm going to jump that top rate up to 45%. And it's going to go up to where if you make over $1 billion a year, you're going to pay 49% on that dollar over a billion. And the rationale here being is that you've got income inequality in this country that's been divided at the worst level since 1928. Most people know that wages have been stagnant for the middle class and the lower income workers for a couple of generations now, going back to the late 70s, early 80s. Schakowsky had an interesting, and these are her numbers. She said the United States today is the richest 1%. People at the very top, the folks that our friend Jim seems to be enamored with. They own 34% of this country's wealth. So 1% of the country, you could fit them into a small room. 34% of the nation's wealth. The bottom 90%, where you and I are, the vast majority of us, the bottom 90%, we own just 29% of the country's wealth. The top 100th of 1%. Now these are the people who you can have dinner with. They average $27 million each per household. Now, the folks at the bottom, 90% of us, you're talking about $31,000 a year. That's a pretty big number. And, you know, when I look at this and I hear people saying, well, you know, you're talking about redistributing wealth. Well, it's already been redistributed. It's been redistributed away from us. And all of this talk about, oh, we got to go after unions. We got to destroy those unions. Because they still have health care and they still have pensions and they still make a reasonable wage. And you know what? They've got a voice when someone wants to take that away from them. And that's what really ticks bosses off. That's what really ticks corporations and people who want to be in charge off. The fact that their subordinates actually have a voice. So we see what's going on in Madison. And you remember the guy we talked about last night, Randy Hopper, who is going to be recalled. But the recall people went to his house, and turns out his wife said that he's living in another town with his mistress, his 25-year-old mistress. Well, he's running an ad campaign, and you got to hear this. This is beautiful.
Another day, another protest in Madison.
Yeah, I know. With nearly 8% unemployment, you'd think asking government workers for 5% towards their retirement and 12% for their health care costs would be acceptable.
That's reasonable, but union bosses want to keep bargaining for more perks.
I heard a teachers' union in Milwaukee sued to add Viagra to their health plan. Would have cost taxpayers nearly $1 million. Or the union bus driver in Madison making $160,000 a year. much of it from overtime pay due to collective bargaining.
Wisconsin is nearly $4 billion in debt. We can't afford this. Are these the same union bosses that want to recall Randy Hopper?
Yes, they want to handpick a senator that'll vote the way they tell him to.
Yeah.
But Randy Hopper is working to balance the budget and create jobs. He's fighting for taxpayers. We have to support Randy Hopper.
Paid for by Randy Hopper for State Senate. Marty Ryan.
Is that before or after the mistress thing? Never mind that whole family values thing. The one part of that I got, a couple of parts of it. One, that somehow stealing wages and stealing money from these workers is going to create jobs. It's not. It's going to actually cause the loss of more jobs because those people, you know, for anybody who understands economics, when you have less disposable income, you have less to spend. In an economy where people have less disposable income, there's less activity, which means less jobs. Simple stuff. My other favorite part is there's a bus driver, and there's a bus driver who makes $160,000 a year. And they're right. There's a guy. John Nelson's his name. Made $159,258 in 2009. Almost $110,000 in overtime. And, you know, when you hear that, oh my God, it's shocking. When I hear that, I go, from a business owner's perspective, that is really, really a bad way to run a business. You should be hiring more people. You should not be having that kind of overtime. That tells me you have a staffing problem. So it tells me bad management. But it also tells me you've got a guy who is a 36-year employee who is working his regular 40-hour week and is working an additional 45 hours on top of that. So when I hear that there's a working person who's making $159,000, working 93 hours a week, I say, one, wow, that's a bit much. Slow down. You're gonna be the richest guy in the grave. But I say, well, all right, fine. That's just bad management. I look at the story that came out today from Reuters. Johnson & Johnson's CEO, who understand Johnson & Johnson's stock is falling. They are a mess. The U.S. government is overseeing their operations for quality problems. Understand, this is a guy who's leading a sinking ship. He's taking $28.7 million. And yet nobody seems to be upset by the fact that you've got this CEO making almost $29 million at a time when the company is losing. What happened to the meritocracy? So I went back and I looked at the tax brackets of the, you know, using Schakowsky's mentality, her proposed bill, what's being paid now, and I looked at both of those workers. If you want to call a CEO a worker. And I came up with the guy who's making $28.7 million, he's paying about 34% tax on his takings right now. The guy who made $159,000 paid about 24%. It's not bad. I go back to the golden age of this country. Everybody agrees that I've talked to says, you know, the 50s were the golden age of the country. 1953 was just a wonderful time. Had a good socialist president, a Republican, Dwight David Eisenhower. Going back, and I just went and I did a little bit of math. Turns out, our CEO friend back in 1953, on that $28.7 million, it would have been about $3.5 million back then. He would have paid 91% tax. They would have taken $3.1 million from him. Our friend who made $159,000, he would have paid 40% tax. And the reason I think this is important is because you get people like Jim who say, well, you know, we're overtaxed. It's never been taxed like we've been taxed now. We're just so taxed. The reality is we're at the lowest tax rates this country has seen in a good portion of our history. I would say ever. Especially on the working class. And especially on the very, very wealthy. Because our friend at Mr. Weldon, the CEO of Johnson & Johnson, I don't know how much of that nearly $29 million are stock options. I don't know how much of that are investment income. I don't, because that's not all wages. Understand, in this country, we tax wages, the stuff that you go and drive your truck or swing your hammer or push papers across your desk or whatever career, talking to a microphone, whatever your career is. We tax that differently than we tax the people who are sitting on their yacht drinking margaritas. We have a capital gains tax of 15%. So when David Tepper made $4 billion on a good bet on Wall Street last year, he paid 15% tax. It was just a good bet. He didn't work for it. It's not like he was out there. No, there's no sweat off his brow, no blood off his hands. Made a good bet. So the question that I have, and I go back to this often, especially when I talk to folks like our friend Jim, who seems to think that there's just been this massive redistribution of wealth from the very wealthy. He seems to agree with the Michelle Bachmans of the world.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, we are. We are running out of rich people.
The reality is we are not. We are creating an entitled class of billionaires. You go back to the cherished Ronald Reagan years. We had 3 billionaires in the country. 3. And through his tax policy and this massive shift of tax burden from the very, very wealthy down to the middle class and working class of this country, you created a billionaire class of nearly 1,000 before the Great Recession. And now we've got all 400 of the Forbes 400 are billionaires. So explain to me where this whole redistribution didn't happen. And then we're talking about cutting billions of dollars across the country in education, cutting opportunity for kids to go to college. I'm sorry, I'm just not with you on that. You know, this idea that we're broke, and I hear this often, the right-wing talk shows have just been pounding this theme. We're broke, we're broke, we're broke. No, we're not broke. There is enormous wealth in this country. The problem is it's being used elsewhere. You go back to our trade deals. Trade deals were not about goods and products. Our trade deals were breaking down financial barriers. That's what NAFTA was really about. The flow of capital across borders. You know, during the 60s and 70s, that was the move. Tear down these borders to capital so you could create hot zones and capital could leave this country. And that's what's happened. So this blind faith to wealth, I'm telling you, we are giving away the future of this country. And if you love this country, I say you turn around and you support something like Schakowsky's bill and say, you know what? If we're all going to have to sacrifice, if times are tough, we got to tighten our belt, because we hear that theme all the time. You know, we got to sacrifice a little bit. Times are tough. Maybe our friends who are make $28.7 million a year, maybe they could kick in just a little bit. Because under Schakowsky's bill, our friend Mr. Weldon, the CEO, his tax rate would simply go up from 34, almost 35%, up to 45%. Just a 10% bump. But that bump will help solve our debt problems, will help continue to educate our children, and will help create jobs as country. In this country. Now, I'm saying the tax cuts we're giving to people like this create jobs in China, in India, and around the globe. And that, my friends, are the things the right is not telling you. Because they are bought and paid for by corporate, simple stuff. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend, Erwin Aronson. Again, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If there's any part of the show that you missed, make sure you check out our podcasts. You can download them for your convenience, your entertainment. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Cunningham.
Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republicans controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Managers Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while raising personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency managers bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Well, you know, that's what 20,000 people in Wisconsin have done since Scott Walker began his assault on working people. That's it. They have stood together. 20,000 people have joined Working America. You know, and to me, again, you know, there should be flowers and candy sent to Scott Walker for his rejuvenating the labor movement and rejuvenating people's belief and faith in each other. I know he's rejuvenated mine. And thank you, Scott. Anyway, let's talk to our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Irwin, thanks for taking time for us, brother.
Hey, good to hear your voice, Rick.
20,000 people joining Working America. That's a great thing in Wisconsin.
Well, you know what? 20,000 people joining Working America, joining the labor movement in the course of only about 28 days. It is the most significant new organizing drive we've had in a long time in that part of the country.
Yeah, you know, I look at what's going on, and we've been talking about all day so far, the whole program, about this, you know, the right-wing game plan, which is take from education, take from social programs, hand to very wealthy, hand to corporations. At some point, there's got to be a blowback, and I'm saying what happened yesterday in Reading with Judy Schwenk thumping her Republican opponent, that was blowback to this budget.
Oh, I don't think there's any question, but it's blowback to the budget and blowback to the Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana and Ohio situations. A mere 6 weeks ago, Judy's numbers were down among independents. She was losing independents 5-1, and yesterday she won independents 9.2-1. And this was no small turnout, typical special election. This was a huge turnout for a special election. And it appears as if she claimed about 60% of the vote, including well over 50%, dramatically over 50% of the independents.
Yeah, a major thumping. I mean, because I was expecting a close race, major thumping.
Well, as recently as yesterday morning, I was on the phone with my folks that I deal with in the Redding and Berks County area and in the Schuylkill County area as well. And they were telling me to plan to stay up real late last night, and I got to bed early.
Yep.
I got to bed early and smiling.
We announced it here in the second segment of the program last night when we had Scott Conklin on, and, you know, I was surprised it was that early as well. But let's talk about this, because the budget to me, again, you know, Scott Conklin was here last night, a state representative, saying, you know, that this $1 billion that they're cutting from education is going to harm our state irreparably. But he was a little more optimistic that even Republicans were going to go back to their districts and take a major thumping from constituents.
I don't think there's any question. This is not a Democratic or Republican exclusively problem. We have a huge number, nearly a third of the members of the General Assembly were people who attended state-owned or state-related universities. Think about that. And they're Democrats and Republicans, and their alma maters are going to get a thumping under this Corbett proposed budget. And either they vote against it or they're saying to the people of their state and of their districts, I got mine and tough luck for you.
Yeah, and to me, again, you know, we had a caller earlier who said, you know, it's her belief that this is really just about privatization. This is about profiting from another bit of the commons, if you will.
Well, it is privatization, but it's really much more. Privatization is the first step, but the second and much more cynical and much more long-term devastating effect is that it's really setting up a multi-class system for access to education. People of means will get to go to the good schools, and they won't have to have their own means utilized for it because the taxpayer is paying for it through vouchers. And they'll get to go to universities, and the rest of us will be left behind. And that's really what this is about, because it's not about privatization. It's about having an undereducated, underskilled workforce that can be kept under the thumb and have the boot of the boss on their necks at a workplace. And why have to import things from China when you can just have a race to the bottom right here and eliminate all those transportation costs? And that's what this really is, and that's what the future portends as long as we don't get up and stand up and call this budget proposal for what it is. This is the dumbing down of Pennsylvania, but what this really is the defunding of education, almost as if investing in education is investing in apartheid. And we're going to stop this process whereby we reach back to those less fortunate, reach back to the next generation, and help bring them along and give them an opportunity to do better than their parents did.
And again, you know, as we've been told, and this has been generations that this has happened, that education is that key to a brighter future, especially now. During the 90s, we were sold on this idea of a knowledge-based economy. And in order to succeed in a knowledge-based economy, you got to go to college, you got to get higher educations. And I know people who have master's degrees who are unemployed.
Well, I know people who have law degrees that are pretty dramatically unemployed. And value of a new law degree for recent graduates has depreciated more than 50% in the last 24 months.
So the question then becomes, you know, was this knowledge-based economy all it was cracked up to be, and don't we need to start going back to building things again, having trade policies that reward companies for staying and punish people for leaving?
Very clearly, the trade policy issue is overarching and overwhelming. And as long as we reward companies that are headquartered in the United States by telling them that whatever they make overseas, as long as they don't repatriate it into the United States, we won't touch it, we won't tax it, is a reward at a time when we should be doing exactly the opposite. If they make something that's imported here and it's made offshore, it needs to be taxed, it needs to be the subject of a tariff, we need to rebuild our industrial base. And at the same time, there's nothing wrong with a knowledge-based economy for anybody except the know-nothings who want to try to dumb us down and depreciate education. Education is democracy, Rick. There is nothing, nothing at all that exists in a society that can't be made better by having a committed program to educate everybody to the greatest degree each of us is able and each of us can learn.
Yeah.
Lifelong learning has been the motto of this country until now, and now we're being told that somehow or another education is bad. And I want to watch how these people explain that we're going to, at one and the same time, increase class size, get rid of teachers, shut down buildings, and still have to increase their local taxes.
Interesting point. Let me ask you this, though. You know, the more I hear the radical right, the more I hear the sloganeering coming out that all of our problems will be solved if we just did away with those unions and those workers with rights and just do away with collective bargaining. I mean, we see this attack in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Missouri, and you name the state, there's an attack on people having a voice and being part of the democratic process. And I guess the question I have is this the panacea? Is this the dream that we're being sold? Because I don't think so, but maybe you've got a different opinion. I don't know.
My opinion is one of reality and history. Anybody who ignores history, as the saying goes, is doomed to be killed by it, repeat it. We have a slice of history in this country from the 1930s through the 1970s where unions grew and prospered, and during that period of time we invented a couple little things that hadn't existed before, like the middle class. We invented a notion that people could actually participate in their democracy. We invented a notion that families could actually sustain themselves on the wages that they earned. We even reached a point where people were able to buy houses and buy automobiles and maybe even have some furniture and a TV in it. And maybe when it came time, pay for the kids to get married and even help the kids to finance a college education. Somehow or another, we seem to have abandoned all of that and forgotten it, and in the process, we've allowed America to deteriorate. And the thread that bound that all together was the existence of strong and vital unions that acted as an advocate and a voice at the workplace for the people who are working in the rubber factories and the auto factories and the garment factories and the electronics factories and the textile factories that employed several generations of Americans and have now left our shores and gone elsewhere.
All because of trade policy that's encouraged it.
Exactly right. Trade policy that's encouraged it and tax policy that's encouraged it. We've encouraged manufacturers whose technology is developed and invented here to take that technology offshore and use it to exploit working people in other countries where they don't have labor protections, and then bring those goods back into the United States, sell them here, but take the money offshore again so they don't have to pay tax on it. And in the meantime, soon we won't have the jobs that allow us to pay for them. I mean, one of the arguments some years ago when NAFTA was on the table was that we need to have labor standards and environmental standards in Mexico that were the equivalent of those in the United States. But instead, we don't have that, so the people in Mexico that manufacture the electronics that we buy here can't afford to buy them themselves. The people that are making the wiring harnesses for cars now in Mexico can't afford to buy the cars in which they're installed. And pretty soon, if these corporate raiders and profiteers in places like Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and Indiana and here in Pennsylvania get their way, we will be equal to those folks in Mexico. We'll be equal to those in India and China and Sri Lanka and Honduras as well. And that's where they want to send us back to.
Well, it is the great leveling off that Friedman talked about. You know, we'll all be working for pennies, I guess. What do you think? Recently, Newt Gingrich had an interesting thing observation that he would rather have the jobs in Mexico than China because the jobs would at least be in the neighborhood.
I think it's a wonderful observation. I think the first job we should have sent to Mexico is whatever job it is that he has.
Excellent point. Yeah.
I sometimes wonder whether people like Newt Gingrich or this Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin actually think about the words that they utter before they come out of their mouths.
You mean like this gem from Michelle Bachmann? Listen to this.
Running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, We're running out of rich people.
We're running out of rich people.
Well, you know what? Maybe we ought to run her out of the country and we could have a few more rich people.
And did you know that they heard the shots around the world and Lexington and Concord up there in New Hampshire?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I heard that last night as I was listening to the evening news, and the thought went by me that here we are in Pennsylvania slashing education budgets. We don't have to slash the budget for education in Pennsylvania. They've already ignored it in wherever it was that Michelle Bachmann came from in Minnesota. Because she obviously missed history class.
Yeah, and she said, "Well, it's only conservatives that the media goes after. It's only the conservatives."
Yeah, well, it's that liberal media, you know, Fox TV, that liberal media. After all, we know that that's part of this sinister commie pinko socialist plot sponsored by none other than Barack Obama, the un-American president.
Yeah. Barack Hussein Obama. Don't forget that.
Yes,
you got to get to that as well. But bringing this back home, I mean, the reality is across the country, we're seeing governors in at least 12 states who are cutting education at a time when they're handing more money to businesses in the hopes that maybe they'll be able to attract business. I'm not quite getting how you're going to get folks to come in when you have untrained, uneducated workers.
Because they're not coming in to hire workers. They're coming in to hire technology, and they export the work offshore now. But once we get everybody dumbed down and we can create a bunch of unskilled jobs where we pay only for computers and the maintenance of computers and put people to work as if they're mere machines, then they'll come back here. That's the whole point. I mean, we need to understand this is nothing new. This goes back to 1980 when Reagan was elected president. And we heard all of these platitudes about the states being places in which experiments can be undertaken. The Republican Governors Association very clearly got together and they decided to experiment. And the experiment is, how can we screw with workers? So in Wisconsin, it's to do away with bargaining rights. In Pennsylvania, it's to do away with the education that allows people to effectively bargain for their rights. In Michigan, it's let's pass a law that says the governor can take away the will of the people and displace the people that were elected locally, even though these are the same Republican leaders who tell us that everything is local and we have to fight for and protect local education control in particular. The governor would be able to displace an entire school board, abrogate existing contracts, not only for collective bargaining purposes, but even for the purchase of supplies, set aside contracts for building construction and maintenance and things of that nature. This is a series of experiments. They want to see which they can get away with where and try to impose it everywhere once they're done with the little experiment.
Yep. And they got the same playbook from their friends at the little tinky tank at the Heritage Foundation.
You got it. And the other little tinky tank here, the Commonwealth Foundation in Pennsylvania, which purports to be some kind of intellectual repository, but all it is a mouthpiece for the lunatic fringe.
And they've got a lunatic running it. Irwin, I appreciate your time. Always great to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Sounds like a plan. Be well, take care, and don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up.
All righty. Yeah, all this stuff, I got to be honest, reminds me of the George Carlin clip, and I got to play it before we take the break. Listen to this.
Want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers, people who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly easier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back. so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club.
Defender of the working class majority, Greg Smith.
In American politics, the past not only sticks with us, but it often provides the best definition of what's going on in the politics of the present. So it can be useful to revisit some powerful words from our history. Today's media and political powers, for example, keep using the word conservatism to describe current political trends in our democratic republic. Poor choice of words. From the Koch brothers to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from GOP House Speaker John Boehner to such anti-worker governors as Walker of Wisconsin, an autocratic power grab is underway to enthrone corporate power and moneyed elites to rule unilaterally over our government, economy, and environment. Nothing conservative about that. Rather, a word from America's past best describes their goal, plutocracy. It is the direct opposite of democracy, which is government by the many, by all of the people, by us. Plutocracy, on the other hand, is government by the wealthy, by them and for them. The struggle between democracy and plutocracy has defined our political history from the Revolution of 1776 forward. And now, here we go again. Wall Street banksters, corporate chieftains, speculators, and other pampered plutocrats are out to crush the hard-won laws, rules, institutions, and social compacts that we, the people, have struggled to put in place over the years to undergird our people's democratic authority. Busting unions, unleashing corporate money and politics, restricting access to courts, gutting financial and environmental regulation, all of these and more are about supplanting our democracy with their plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, call them what they are, not conservatives, but self-serving plutocrats. Or nail them with another good word from the past, kleptocrats, government by thieves.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I appreciate the interaction and the input. It's good to challenge your beliefs. It's good to challenge your ideas. That's why I appreciate when people call in and disagree, because it gives you an opportunity to find out where you stand. Anyway, today, what's going on? A new poll out, ABC Washington Post poll released. 26% of those surveyed say they are optimistic about the American system of government. This is the lowest level in this poll's history, which has been measuring this question since 1974. Meanwhile, almost half of the country said that they are unsure of their views of the system, the highest level of uncertainty. Just 23% said they're optimistic about the system of government and how well it works. And, you know, this, I think this has more to do with the fact that you have 24/7 constant news of people always looking for that sound bite, that snippet, and you have politicians who who have to use this in order to get reelected, to get their face on the news, to push their agendas, whatever that may be. And part of me says, you know, it's at the peril of our democracy. So when you see things like Rick Snyder in Michigan saying, you know, we're just going to do away with the whole democratic process and we're going to appoint a, to use a Republican word, a czar, to oversee these cities and throw out all the contracts and throw out all the agreements and throw out precedent, throw out school boards, throw out elected officials, pitch all of that and have one, well, basically a czar. Seems to me, Jake, to be kind of, oh, I don't know, short-sighted.
Well, it is, but, you know, we mention Fox News from time to time. I mean, think about when Michelle Bachmann says things like that. I mean, how many people in Fox News challenge her? How many times has she said things that were just so inaccurate and so fundamental to anybody that has a modicum of understanding of the American system or American history? When did Fox News call her on it? When was the last time?
I can't remember ever. But the reality, Jake, is people see her. You know, politics have turned into a popularity contest. And I don't know that they haven't always been a popularity contest. For me, I want a guy who's a lot smarter than me. You know, when Bush ran for president, you had the question out there, you know, this is a guy I'd like to have a beer with. He's a good guy. And I think he is. I think he'd be a riot to hang out with. I think he'd be a great guy to go clubbing with or to, you know, go kick a ball or do something with. I think he'd be a great guy to hang out with. I didn't want him running my country. I want somebody a little bit smarter than I am. But, you know, we have this, you know, this bizarre belief that we have to like the guy. He's got to be the most popular. I want the smartest guy.
Well, I think the truth is I think a lot of Americans feel comfortable when they look at George Bush and say, well, you know what? He's just an average guy. He's like me. Well, really? You might give that impression, but he came from an altogether different world. The problem was that he was far too ordinary. Lacked a total comprehension of a lot of important issues. He just happened to be at the right place at the right time with a lot of money.
I drove by a place, and it said, you miss George Bush yet? It was a burned-down house. And it said, do you miss George yet? And the answer is no, I don't.
I saw that on a Republican bumper sticker after 6 months. I mean, come on, give this man a chance. You know, you talk about you want somebody that's smarter than you. I'll tell you who is a very smart man, and you loved him, is George Carlin. I mean, when you talk about satire and social commentary, he was very funny, but yet he was very right on.
Well, that clip I played, that clip is at least 15 years old. And you know, you cannot refute any part of it.
He's a genius.
They're coming for the Social Security. They're going to get it, and all across the board, man. You know, it's all. And now they've even got the Democrats who've bought into the idea. It's just amazing stuff. Anyway, Sarah Palin evidently getting some poor marks from even Republicans. And personally, I see she's about an inch deep. You know, she's good at what she does. She is a master at being a gold digger and doing what she does, and good for her. But as far as being heartbeat from the presidency, I'm glad she's where she's at. Anyway, Palin's unfavorable ratings are 37% by Republicans and Republican-leaning independents, according to an ABC Washington Post poll. That puts her in a more negative light than Romney, Huckabee, and even Gingrich, with his, I cheated on my wife, but it's because I loved my country and I worked too hard. I'm still hoping my wife buys that someday if it ever happens. I work hard, I love my country. Although she did tell me I would find myself out on the street, with all the junk that I've been saving. I wouldn't get any of the good stuff. None of the good stuff. Anyway, today, Republicans during a House subcommittee meeting lambasted body scanners and pat-downs by the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. I got to be honest, I really thought that this was going to be a right-wing strong point because they're really about control. They're really about the iron fist, power. But they've decided the other side. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chairman John Mica from Florida said the equipment is flawed and can be subverted. He said, our staff has subverted it. TSA Administrator Pistol said GAO is very clever. Well, what do you think the terrorist is, Micah said. I guess I got a question why his staff is working to subvert the TSA stuff. Kind of makes me wonder about that. But I find it interesting, though. Micah's response to why he thinks it doesn't work is because people could hide stuff you know where. And Micah said that, you know, because most people know that they're not going to touch your junk. And I guess I have two questions. One being, you know, why is it that, you know, if we're going to go through this whole thing, why is it we're not touching? And two, when did all of that stuff turn into junk? I'm still very happy with mine. I haven't junked it yet.
Well, I think that comes from one of the first incidents when one of the passengers said, you know, don't touch my junk. Remember that? And they recorded it. And ever since then, you know, they picked up on that.
Yeah, well, anyway. Also today, Republicans in the House complained that the new government agency designed to protect consumers from problems with mortgages, credit cards, and other lenders. Republicans think a whole bunch too much power. They also criticized it for participating in federal state effort to force mortgage companies to change the way they foreclose on troubled homeowners. Elizabeth Warren, who's the head of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, testified today before the Financial Institutions Subcommittee of the House Financial Services Committee. Warren said the agency was badly needed and might have helped the country avoid the housing problems it has suffered, including abuses in the way foreclosures have been processed. She said, quote, if there had been a consumer agency in place, the problems in mortgage servicing would have been exposed earlier and fixed while they were still small, long before they became a national scandal. And you look at the fact that the housing market has collapsed, and you go back at, you know, to the fact that we undid Glass-Steagall, we turned banks into casinos, we took off all the regulations. And it was both sides of the aisle that pushed this ideology. It was both sides of the aisle that wanted people to buy homes. And, you know, it was corporate America pushing this because, you know, if you can get somebody locked into a mortgage, they're going to be less likely to go on strike and ask for better wages. They're going to be more likely to put up with a whole bunch of nonsense just to keep their jobs. And look what's going on now. What's the number one phrase that we've heard for the last couple of years? I'm just glad to have a job. I'm just happy to be working. Because they've put that in your mind. That's part of our psyche. Anyway, Reuters also reported today that housing starts posted their biggest decline in 27 years back in February, while building permits dropped to their lowest level on record, suggesting the beleaguered real estate sector has yet to rebound. And this is what we talked about last night. You know, the reality is while all of these foreclosures are still out there, while the ability of banks... Well, right now, their inability, because they've screwed up the record keeping so bad and there's no way to figure out who owns what. Their banks trying to foreclose on houses where they don't even own the mortgage anymore. It's nuts. And it's all because we've allowed these banks to regulate themselves. We've allowed them to set up their ways of doing things. And now we're suffering. And we're suffering in a big way. Anyway. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations.
However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk to us. Call 800-LINE-555 or go to pscc.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I'm looking at this net neutrality thing, and this again is one of those issues that I think is of the utmost importance to the middle class and to aspiring entrepreneurs, small businesses like mine, small businesses all across this country. Having an open internet where everybody has the same opportunity, where you're not being penalized for doing well, where the best ideas win out. What we're seeing right now is, well, what we're seeing is who's going to control the future of one of the last democratic things on this planet. I look at this net neutrality as one of those issues, and look, it's one of these things that where content is the most important. If you've got good content, you're going to have equal access. Where I see this going is those with the most money will get the best positioning. And there's some of it going on now, but the reality is if you've got good content, you're going to be able to get your message out now. So what we're seeing is people like AT&T and Comcast and other providers with this idea that they're going to be able to cap user fees. You're only going to be able to download so much. It says the move will see AT&T broadband users forced into a tiered internet that would limit accounts to a paltry 150 gigabytes a month. Users who download too much information on AT&T's broadband network will be subject to an additional $10 for every 50 gigabytes. And, you know, they go through a whole bunch of other numbers on how much it's going to cost for more. And the more you use it, the absolute more you're going to pay. And I see this as that jockeying for control. And I think everybody agrees the first person who's going to die in this, the first company that will die will be Netflix. They're the ones I think everybody has agreed is going to die a quick death. And you look at someone like Senator Al Franken, who warned that net neutrality or the treatment of all data on a network as equal, was under threat by the Comcasts and the AT&Ts. And that, you know, at this point, something has to be done. Now, he was at this South by Southwest Music and Film and Technology Festival down in Texas, where he said, "I came here to warn you the party may be over, They're coming after the internet, hoping to destroy the very thing that makes it such an important medium for independent artists and entrepreneurs. It's openness and freedom. And, you know, as I said before, as someone who runs a very small business, who uses the internet, we put all of our programs on the web for people to download. We have a number of people who subscribe to our podcasts, who watch the video stream, who participate and interact with us. At some point, I do see down the road where if you're not on the right side of the issue, if you're not speaking the corporate line, much as we've done with terrestrial radio, you're going to be shuffled aside. You're not going to get the same access. That's what concerns me. Right now, the internet is open, and people have an opportunity. I think if the FCC jumps into this and tries to regulate it, one, and the way it looks is, you know, AT&T is okay with it. And when I watched the hearings the other day, and AT&T was all in favor, oh, yeah, this is fine. We're good with it. We can work this. That tells me very simply, Jake, that they have figured out, how they're going to control it.
And unfortunately, there's some powerful, powerful interests that are pushing it.
Well, it's a lot of money, and it's control of message. Again, once you have the power, once you have the power to dictate what people see, hear, and read, you have the ability to control what they think. And, you know, the guy who called earlier, you know, if you're constantly inundated with right-wing talking points that, you know, unions are bad, and they, you know, they destroy job creation, and they force companies out of the country, and they do all these negative things, they're just a bunch of thugs, and you're going to buy into it if that's all you hear and that's all you see and that's what you're inundated with. But I'm telling you, the face of the folks in Wisconsin, these are well-educated, professional people who said, you know what? We're better off when we come together. We're better off collectively than we are separated. And this is one of those things that I talk to working people about. Look, you know, I don't like everything that my Teamsters union has done in the past. Don't like everything. But what I do like is the fact that we are together on issues that are important to my family and to my livelihood. That's what's important. And I look at how much effort right now. You look at the effort that's gone into taking that away from people, from stealing those rights. And I say, you know, this isn't about budgets. This isn't about money. This is about hatred and ideology.
But I do believe, most certainly midterm, 4 or 5 years out, but I believe even short term, in Wisconsin and in Michigan, and hopefully all over the United States where they're trying to just kill unions, they have overplayed their hand. Certainly, certainly. In Wisconsin, they have overplayed their hand. You see the Democrats, you see farmers, you see rank and file, just average citizens out there motivated, out there joining organizations that are allied with labor, going out there and getting in recall efforts, out on the street. Wow, I haven't seen this kind of activity in a long, long, long time. It's great to see. Hopefully, short term, it'll wind up with the governor with egg on his face and quite a few of those Republicans out the door. And the next thing is to go after the governor.
Important breaking news. Tuesday afternoon, several Madison police officers were monitoring a crowd of around 100 protesters outside of M&I Bank, 1 West Main Street, when Senator Glenn Grothman approached. Demonstrators allowed Senator Grothman to pass, but some were verbally abusive to the lawmaker. When Senator Grothman exited the bank, he was also subjected to angry words. As he walked away, a man hugged him. That's right. He was hugged. Fox News reported it as he was assaulted. Yeah, that was actually the police report. I read you the exact police report. He was hugged.
And anybody charged for that hugging?
No, the police let him go. It says an officer reported that Grothman did not appear to enjoy the embrace and was able to squirm away. The officer came to the man and told him it is not okay to put hands on people who do not wish contact. The man told the officer he had no idea who Senator Grothman was, but that he hugged him because I loved him. He added that he loves everyone and that he decided to hug Grothman because he was wearing a suit like the one the man used to wear when he worked in insurance. The man told the officer that he is the Peace Walker, and that he had trekked here from Las Vegas, and that he is considering running for president. He also asked the officer if he knew Snoop Dogg. The officer said he did not, and again, told the man not to touch people who do not want to be touched. That was the official, entire official police report from Madison, Wisconsin, on 3/15/2011 at 4:58 p.m. Central Time. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everybody happy. Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Let's surrender anyone at all. Just got time to say your prayer. While you're waiting for the hammer to fall.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Today, the Senate's top Democrat, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, emphatically rejected changes to Social Security that would improve the entitlement program solvency, writes Politico, suggesting that he would be willing to revisit the program structure in 2 decades. Once the project becomes insolvent. Evidently, he was interviewed on Rachel Maddow's show where he said, 2 decades from now, I'm willing to look at it, but right now I am not. Now, look, what's going on is you've got these Republicans who are hell-bent on the idea of destroying Social Security. They're hell-bent on taking away this program. They didn't like it to begin with. They've fought against it for 75 years, And now they see an opportunity. They see a crisis. They see an opportunity to, while people are thinking cut, 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 well, to go after this. And you got Minority Leader Mitch McConnell warning on Friday that if senators are refusing to do anything with Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, that, well, they're not going to raise the debt ceiling. So we could see a showdown over this. Now, I got to be honest. In this fight, if you frame it in the way that McConnell, and generally Republicans are smarter than this, but to frame it in a way that unless you cut Social Security and Medicare, we're not going to increase the debt level. I think, and maybe you can help me here, because I'm thinking that's a losing proposition, because Social Security is a very popular program and a very successful program that has worked enormously well. It's only when we put Republicans in charge of the cookie jar that all the cookies seem to disappear.
Oh, by the way, something we don't even talk about, and the Republicans don't even want to hear it, has a multiplier effect. Why? Because a good many of the people on Social Security actually spend every penny of it and spend it on immediately because they need it to live on. We don't even talk about that.
Well,
so it actually is a stimulus, dare we say it, a stimulus to the economy.
Well, and I'm not even going to go there. It's about respect. It's about honoring contracts. It's about honoring our word. It's about having, oh, I don't know. You know, my grandfather told me when I was a kid. And again, going back to my grandfather, to be honest, we didn't see eye to eye when I was a young man, but I did listen to his advice. I said, really, you've only got one thing that you cannot ever break. A man can never break his word. Your word is your bond. It's who you are. If you're someone who, you know, you're just like a used car salesman, you'll say, do anything, politician, no one's going to respect you. You look at what's going on in Michigan. You look at what's going on with Social Security, and what you've got are you've got people who are willing to break the nation's commitment, the nation's word, if you will. To me, that's a dangerous precedent to start. And I don't care which side of the aisle you're on in this. This is dangerous.
Well, you are correct. It's a deep commitment. It's a social pact, social bond to the people of this country. You work all your life. We will attempt through Social Security to make sure that you don't fall back into poverty and that you can enjoy the rest of your lives with at least a bottom line of human decency. I agree with you. That is very much a deep, deep commitment on a part of this country. And it's extremely popular. And for a long time, politicians perceived it as the third rail. You don't touch it, you die. I think to a large degree it is. However, the tenure of the times, the Republicans, the real conservatives have just looked at Social Security as envy because it really is, in many ways, the last vestiges of someone who they despise. That was FDR. And if they can get Social Security, it's not just about eliminating that. It's about removing all those vestiges of effective government.
You know, what they've done a masterful job of is convincing people my age, you know, I'm in my early 40s, and really the people younger than me, that it's not going to be there. It's broke. You know, in 2037, it just ends. The world stops. It completely dies. There's not another penny. Even though we know that that's not true. But they've repeated this ad nauseum. And again, depending on where you're reading, what you're paying attention to, it's a very strong soundbite. Social Security goes bankrupt in 2037. That's not true. It's the same message that the country's broke. We're broke. It's not true. But it makes for simple messaging. Now understand, if we do nothing today, 2037, it's going to stop paying out 100% of the benefits, and I think pays out something like 75% for the next 20, 30 years. And then incrementally it goes down from there. If nothing is done, if nothing changes, now I can fix Social Security pretty simply. I pay Social Security tax on every single penny that I earn. But then again, I don't. I'm not fortunate enough to make more than $106,800 a year. I say you simply take that cap off. Say, sorry, Bill Gates, you know, whatever income you earn, you're going to pay Social Security tax on all of it, just like the worker at McDonald's or the guy swinging the hammer or the person digging the ditch. You're going to pay it 100%. We're going to lower that rate down to 3 or 4% so everybody gets a nice little tax cut at the bottom. We spur our economy. We got things going in the right direction. And you know what? The rich guy makes a boatload more money. Why? Because those consumers at the bottom are buying goods, creating jobs, and spinning the economy upward. Simple stuff, but we don't have leaders in this country who think that way. What we have a couple, but what we have are people who are hell-bent on this idea that we need to cut. And I'm sorry, I'm not that guy. There are some things that can be cut, sure. I'm sure there's some trimming to be done, but not with a chainsaw.
Well, you realize that there is a Republican who says he's running for president, good bet, Donald Trump, who I was surprised, came out and said, no, we shouldn't be cutting Social Security. It doesn't have to be cut by Social Security. Said those who are talking about it are, you know, stupid people. I said that publicly. Now, how that's going to be received in the Republican Party remains to be seen. I personally don't think that he might run, but I don't see Donald Trump as having much of a chance. I think it's kind of a pseudo ego thing coupled in with giving him, you know, a lot of good PR. Maybe he might put his foot in the water a little bit and test it, but in the end, I don't see him as a real legitimate candidate. But I like his comment. And it's going to be interesting if he sticks around, see how the Republicans react to that.
Yeah, well, at the end of it, I think for him, again, he's another one of these hey, look at me characters. And, you know, hey, you need those people. I do think that this is it's a publicity stunt. And it's going to get him the attention he wants and that he thrives for. Good for him, man. Helps move our economy along. Gets people watching that TV show that he's on, which I can't. I've never watched. I hear it's interesting.
The Apprentice?
I hear it's interesting. I don't have time for that. But, you know, hey, look, you know, God bless him. If that works, that works. Anyway, somebody sent me a picture on Twitter that I thought was interesting. Evidently, the folks at M&I Bank have had a run on folks coming in, taking their money out, and asking for documents, because evidently the claim is, and I don't know how accurate it is, and I don't know if it's true or not, but some concerned folks who had accounts there were afraid that M&I Bank was selling their information. So they went in to ask some questions, and they called out, M&I called out the police. And there's a horse and a police car outside the bank. I just thought that was interesting. But what I find... What I find really interesting in all this is this debate that the right is trying to get us involved in. That, you know, when they were patronizing their people, the folks who support them, that was okay. But when unions say, you know what, we're going to take our billions out of your bank and move it to a bank that's not contributing to Scott Walker and not contributing to the policies that are going to take us down, somehow the right thinks that's screwed up. And the reality is people in Wisconsin are ticked off. Workers are ticked off at Walker's attacks on collective bargaining. So they're launching a boycott campaign at people who have contributed to his campaigns. So when we come back in a minute, I'm curious what your thoughts on this idea of, because I think you got to get corporations out of politics altogether. Is this a way, by going after people who donate to different campaigns, by going after companies whose CEOs donate to different campaigns, is this a way to get the corporate money out? Is this the way to take back our democracy and maybe bring the costs of these elections down? When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about this, because I think it's so important. And this, you know, this is, and it plays into the Republican theme that, you know, dollars are votes, feet are votes. That if you don't like something, you can take it somewhere else. It really is, I think it's going to be hard for them to defend their bizarre positions. But then again, you know, they really are all over the map. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of people are gathering in Lansing, Michigan today for a big rally protesting an outrageous Republican political attack on working families, seniors, and the poor. Governor Rick Snyder and Republican-controlling Michigan's legislature are pushing through 40 different anti-worker, anti-union bills. The most sweeping may be the Emergency Manager's Bill, a financial martial law that allows governor-appointed corporate managers to literally take over local governments, dissolve them, destroy all collective bargaining contracts, and even oust elected local officials. OPEIU Vice President Joe Marudiak is in Lansing today for that rally.
It is martial law, and the local officials should be just as upset about it as the unions are, because it takes power away from the people themselves, the people who have elected someone to represent them, and gives it to one individual.
Marudiak says the labor movement is more energized than he's seen it in 30 years.
Well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I've never seen this level of energy. I wish we would have had it when the PATCO strike happened, but it's happening now, and people are drawing a line in the sand. And I think it's wonderful, and it shows a lot about the next generation coming up, saying, you know, we're not going to let these rights be taken away.
In addition to attacking working families and unions, Governor Snyder is cutting taxes for corporations in Michigan while increasing personal taxes by 31%, including taxes on seniors and the poor. As many as 50 managers are being trained to take over local governments when Michigan's governor signs that emergency manager's bill. Jesse Russell has more.
The legislation allows the state to appoint the managers in municipalities and school districts that are facing insolvency. The managers would have broad authority, including the power to strip labor contracts and usurp the decisions of elected officials. The state has allegedly been in the process of training more than 50 managers as the debate raged on over the proposals. Michigan State Senator Gretchen Whitmer spoke out against the legislation last week, as it also provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts for businesses.
The current job creation policy is to create so many taxpayer-funded millionaires in the state of Michigan. How on earth is that shared sacrifice? Today, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say it's okay for an individual to come in to a community or into our schools and make $1 million on the backs of the taxpayers.
This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Show working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Wish you had a father, Rick. Father, son, left a candy on. Blue denim, head is vacant.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, here's the thing, and going back to this idea of using your feet, voting with your feet, voting with your pocketbook, a Wisconsin resident, Sam Hawkins, he started this Facebook page that lists companies and political action committees that have either contributed $5,000 or more to Walker, you know, at least put $5,000 towards Walker's campaign. He said, I just grabbed the top contributors off of WisconsinDC.org and put them on a Facebook page. We had companies say, but we give to both sides. It's not fair. You boycott us. It's not an issue of fair, he says. If I don't want to buy your products, I choose not to buy your products. So the question that I guess I have is this what we should be doing across the spectrum in order to get corporations out of the political process? So look, I understand it could hurt jobs. It could cost some of our fellow working class people jobs. But at some point, how do you get the massive influence of corporate money out of the game? How do you stop it? Is it this way? Is it by boycotting? Is it by making people feel it in their pocketbooks? I kind of think so. I think at some point we've got to get these folks out of the political process and back into doing what they do, which is run their business. And, you know, you look at what's going on in Wisconsin and all these states. What happened to the idea of jobs, jobs, jobs? The Republicans ran in November on jobs, jobs, jobs. Are they creating any jobs? I mean, everything I see, every piece of legislation that pops up seems to be destroying jobs, Jake.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wall Street reform. We all know why it was needed. The cutting of the safeguards into the financial system for the last 30 years brought it down. I think Congress did the right thing. Unfortunately, since the Republicans have been in control, they have had to piecemeal disseminate the very protections which were put into the new reform law. Several days ago, AFL-CIO Policy Director Damon Silvers appeared before the House Subcommittee on Capital Markets and Governmental Sponsored Enterprises, which is a long name for a governmental agency that supposedly is looking into job creation bills. This is what he said. He said, the proposals under consideration during today's hearing are not about putting Americans back to work. The proposals are an attempt to chip away at the first meaningful steps toward re-regulating our financial markets after 30 years of deregulations led to the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And he gave several examples. He said, if the truth in labeling, if there was truth in labeling, the burdensome data collection relief act that repeals part of the new law's provisions that brings transparency to CEOs' pay should be renamed the Promotion CEO Pay Secrecy Act. Another example, the Asset-Backed Market Stabilization Act, which would exempt rating agencies from the same standards that apply to other experts giving opinions in connection with offerings of asset-backed securities, would be called Legal Immunity for the People Who Brought You the Financial Panic Act. In the end, Silvers came to this conclusion. The American people are genuinely worried about unemployment and are frustrated that Congress is focused on side issues that will not help get people back to work. A recent Kaiser Health tracking poll conducted in February found that 70% of the adults in this country feel that Congress is paying too little attention to the economy and jobs, and tragically, cynical exercises in financial deregulation, such as the bills under consideration by the Republicans, are really wasting time. It shows you what happens when a very powerful industry gives large amounts of money, and even under the economic almost total collapse of our economy, some of these Republicans want to go back to the good old days. Shame on them.
And I'm not going to just blame it all on Republicans. I'm sure there are a number of bent-knee Democrats who are filling their pockets as well. Look, to me, again, it comes back down to how do we get the money that's corrupting our government out of the system? How do we get all of that out of there? I'm not sure. I would love to see federally funded elections, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to you, me, and everybody else demanding that. And I just don't know that there's consensus yet.
Well, again, they talk about jobs. They even have these hearings. They name them. They say that we're holding these hearings to create jobs. And at the end of the day, They're really not. The Republicans have not shown me or the American people one constructive program that's going to create wealth and create jobs in this country since they've been in.
Sure they have, Jake. Sure they have. They're going to take those collective bargaining rights away, going to take all that money back, and they're going to give it to corporations. See, that's how this all works. That's the end game.
Well,
we're going to take from the workers, as the private sector has done. And we've gone through this. They want to turn the public sector into the private sector, where you have a bunch of workers who are just happy to have a job. I'm just thankful. I'm just glad I have a job. Not that you want to make that job better. Not that you want to go in and ask for a raise and say, I'd like a bit of the wealth I create, please. But they want to create an environment in the public sector that's pervasive in the private sector, which is you have a bunch of peasants. You have people who are beholden to the master. That's simple.
Well, cynically, you say they have created jobs, and you are correct. In China, in Mexico, in a couple other countries. Sadly, that is true. But then, you know, you got to blame some Democrats too, when they originally jumped on board with that. But for the most part, the Republican Party is still the champion of free trade.
Yeah. Anyway, good news out of the NFL. Turns out the Buffalo Bills have told their employees they're going to be taking a pay cut thanks to the NFL's labor dispute. There are going to be no layoffs or planned just yet, but everyone's going to take a pay cut. The AP's reported referring to them as prudent preparations for the possibility of a work stoppage. The chief operating officer, Russ Brandon, said today the Bills have established a program of cuts that focus on shared sacrifice. The comments were made in a statement released by the team to the AP. He went on to say, "We have, for some time, been very upfront and transparent with our staff so that they could make prudent preparations. Every employee in the organization will be affected. The percentage of cuts will be based on salary, with the highest paid employees receiving a larger cut in pay," and good for them. Now the Colts, the Indianapolis Colts have said that, you know what? No, our employees aren't going to be affected. We're not doing it. Some teams have announced pay cuts. Others have had their staffs take unpaid furloughs. The Colts, I may become a Colt fan, just because of this. The fact that their employees, that the ownership are going to treat their employees reasonably. I think I may be a Colt fan.
And by the way, April 6th is the big day for the Players Association. That's the day their case goes before the court.
Well, we will see if we're going to have football next fall. I kind of hope so. I like football.
I have to say, so far, Rick, the Players Association, I think, has stand very united. And so far, they've acquitted themselves well. They've stood up to it. They've done everything intelligently. And I think what they've tried to do, they've reached out to the public to try to educate them on that issue. Because at the end of the day, they're very highly paid, very highly skilled, but at the end of the day, they're still workers.
Yep, absolutely. Well, a little bit of history today. Today, back in 1968, the My Lai Massacre. Today, back in 2003, you may remember Dick Cheney predicting that our troops would be met in Iraq as liberators. In fact, the direct quote was, "greeted as liberators by the Iraqi people." Did that happen? Not so likely. Also today in 2005, remember that Scott Peterson guy who killed his pregnant wife? Well, he was sent to death row today back in 2005. And in 2008, protests from Tibet into three neighboring provinces. The Dalai Lama decried what he called the cultural genocide that is taking place in his homeland. So a little bit of history today. Also back in 1521, Magellan reached the Philippines, where he was killed. Well, maybe he should have checked the map. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Oh,
Rick Smith Show.
In American politics, the past not only sticks with us, but it often provides the best definition of what's going on in the politics of the present. So it can be useful to revisit some powerful words from our history. Today's media and political powers, for example, keep using the word conservatism to describe current political trends in our democratic republic. Poor choice of words. From the Koch brothers to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from GOP House Speaker John Boehner to such anti-worker governors as Walker of Wisconsin, an autocratic power grab is underway to enthrone corporate power and moneyed elites to rule unilaterally over our government, economy, and environment. Nothing conservative about that. Rather, a word from America's past best describes their goal, plutocracy. It is the direct opposite of democracy, which is government by the many, by all of the people, by us. Plutocracy, on the other hand, is government by the wealthy, by them and for them. The struggle between democracy and plutocracy has defined our political history from the Revolution of 1776 forward. And now, here we go again. Wall Street banksters, corporate chieftains, speculators, and other pampered plutocrats are out to crush the hard-won laws, rules, institutions, and social compacts that we, the people, have struggled to put in place over the years to undergird our people's democratic authority. Busting unions, unleashing corporate money in politics, restricting access to courts, gutting financial and environmental regulation, all of these and more are about supplanting our democracy with their plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, call them what they are, not conservatives, but self-serving plutocrats. Or nail them with another good word from the past, kleptocrats, government by thieves.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember yesterday we talked about the Republican legislator from Kansas? His name is Virgil Peck. He said, yeah, it might be, his exact quote, it might be a good idea to control immigration the way the feral hog population's been controlled, with hunters shooting from helicopters. Oh, knee slapper, that's funny stuff. Well, today House Democrats didn't take it so funny. A couple of representatives, Xavier Becerra and Charles Gonzalez, called on Republicans to denounce the comments of Mr. Peck. Good luck on that one. Becerra said, advocating the killing or slaughter of any individual or group is no laughing matter, and I'm sure the good people of Southeast Kansas would agree. We all know too well where that kind of unacceptable talk can lead. Gonzalez said Peck's comments were dehumanizing and inappropriate and could incite prejudices and biases. That's the part that caught my eye. Could incite prejudices and biases. These are people who are prejudiced and biased. There's no could about this. Gonzalez, there's no could. It is what it is. Also, Republicans being themselves, and you got to wonder, at what point does a politician know when to shut their mouth? This Florida State Representative, Kathleen Pasademo, you got to get the background on this first. This 11-year-old girl was raped in Cleveland, Texas. I don't know if you saw this, Jake, but she's an 11-year-old girl. And dressing in a way probably I can say definitely that my daughter, when she turns 11, will never dress. But here again, that's not my call. She was dressed provocatively and said, and this Pasademo woman says, and this just, one of those things, man. She says, there's an article about an 11-year-old girl who was gang raped in Texas by 18 young men because she was dressed like a 21-year-old prostitute. and her parents let her attend school like that. And I think it's incumbent upon us to create some areas where students can be safe in school and show up in proper attire, so what happened in Texas doesn't happen to our students. Let that sink in for a second. You're talking about 18 men. 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old. 18 of them. Raping an 11-year-old girl. Not to mention the fact that an 11-year-old girl has no ability to consent to sex, I don't think in any state, let alone in Texas. But for this woman to put the blame on this girl and her attire, to me is, one of the commentators says, amateurish. I'm saying just plain, you know, again, FCC rules, can't throw that in there. But again, you know, you think about this for a second. The a-holes here, not the girl at all. She's the victim. You know, and I'm not big on making people victims when they're not. She's the victim. What's happening here, and it sounds like to me, and there was, you know, the Associated Press reported a couple of days ago, that there was a group meeting of people who supported these rapists because, you know, how she was dressed. You know, she was asking for it. You know, that 11-year-old girl was, she was asking for it, Jake. She was asking for it.
That's ridiculous.
But and maybe that's the problem with our society. Maybe the problem is we've got such a warped ideal. Maybe we're so twisted mentally that the true victims are the ones that we tend to blame, and the folks who are the folks we should be. And again, I hope, and as a parent and people who've listened to this show know, I am not a pro death penalty person. I'm not in favor of the state killing people, but I'll tell you right now, that was my daughter, there'd be 18 dead young men. I'd take up hunting as a sport. And it'd be, now again, like I said, I'm not in favor of the state killing people, but you know what? I do understand sometimes.
I believe Texas does have a death penalty, doesn't he?
Yeah, well. Mm-hmm. 18. At what point did these 18 upstanding young men when did they think this was okay? This is the kind of stuff, I got to be honest, this is the kind of stuff that scares me to death. I've got two daughters, and man, I'll tell you, I'm going to say this because I know it's recorded, someone were to mess with my daughter like this, there would not be a force on this planet that could stop me while I had a breath in my lungs. And, you know, I think that's a father thing. I think that's just, you know, just how it is.
Well, man. You know, you're talking about 18 young men. I'm not sure what economic strata they are.
Well, they're in a poverty, poverty-ridden area.
So we're assuming that they were poor.
Yeah, they were. The report went into that. There was a poverty-stricken area. Again, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Well, it does. Where I was trying to go is if some of the parents are influential, it could become a real sticky political ball game down there.
I mean, just the fact that this woman from Florida weighs in on a state legislator weighs in on something there in Texas just kind of makes me go, are you just plain dumb? And I guess the answer is, yeah, just plain dumb. Oh, man. I don't know if you saw this this story. Again, you know, in talking about Republicans doing more dumb things. And really, you know, going back to the election, they told us it was about jobs. It's all about jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. You need to have jobs. Yet they've done nothing to create jobs. And we see now that they have passed what is being reported as a sweeping anti-abortion bill. Christopher Smith from New Jersey, he has sponsored H.R. 3, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortions Act. That's going to eliminate employer deductions for health insurance if plans include abortion. Now, you know, here's the thing. This is beautiful. because they're going to tell. Come with me on this, because this is beautiful. They're going to tell consumers and the private sector what it is that they can and cannot sell. They are going to tell you as a private citizen, Jake, that you and your family cannot purchase an insurance plan from this company if it has this in it. And they're basically trying to force this company to strip that out of their offering, so you can't even buy it. I mean, it's sheer mastery. And you know the minions, I'm against abortion. I don't care how you get there, just get there. Throw the democratic process away, sure. Put in the abortion czar.
I don't know how that's legal, Rick. I'm sure there's going to be lawsuits.
Well, it's not going anywhere. It's going to pass the House, and it did. It passed the House. But the reality is it's not going anywhere. It got, 221 people on it. Look, it's not going anywhere. It's going to go to the Senate. It's going to die. The Democrats are going to hold it back. But it's that feeling that they had to do it at a time when they told us we're going to create jobs. They told us that they're just one. What the people told them, what the message they took from the election back in November was jobs, jobs, jobs. Yet all they keep focusing on is division, separation. I mean, it's really quite interesting. Really, really quite interesting. Anyway, I'm just shocked by this. Again, our friends at Planned Parenthood, nowhere to be found on the messaging, and at least I haven't found anything on the messaging yet. We are really living in a very bizarre time. And I hope people are paying attention to this stuff. I hope that this is going to be the stuff that come this November and next November, people remember. Because they're banking on the fact that you're going to have amnesia. The Republicans, the radical right, they're hoping and praying that you're going to forget all this stuff, which is why they're doing it now. They figure if they can get it out of the way earlier, they please their base, they please their campaign donors. They know it's not going anywhere, but it's a way to raise campaign money. And that's what a lot of this is. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
They cut all their hours by Washington Decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become a problem? How did the fault become online? The president says, I'm tightening the belt, the only one that's tightening is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget.
If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, all Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
We're smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
And now Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
What's going on tonight in Washington, D.C.?
Okay, well, there is a lot going on. I think the first thing that we really need to be talking about is what is going on with this possible payment that went to the Pakistani families. It's essentially called blood money.
Right.
And this blood money was paid. There was a CIA contractor, and he said he was being robbed, and he killed two people in Pakistan. Well, then they said this was blood money. And so with this quote-unquote blood money, they essentially paid off these families. Now, there was a lot of questions. Did the CIA pay it? Did the State Department pay it? Was this done through the black budget? What will the United States admit to? Zip, zero. Nobody is saying anything. All they will say is this man was released. But they know from the families that there was almost what depends who you talk to, about $2.3 million, maybe $2.5 million.
So I'm sure that came out of the taxpayers' pocket.
That's exactly right.
I mean, there's no surprise. I mean, I'm sure we do this stuff all the time. Only this got out. This got out.
That's right. Our daily budget update is that today the Republicans are saying that they can work with Jack Lew, who's the president's Office of Management of the Budget, very well known from the Clinton administration. They're saying that they can work with him. He's somebody that they can work with. They know him well. They like him. And so that's a little more upbeat on the budget than we've heard. Also, Hillary Clinton in Egypt today, and I'm sure you've been talking about it or heard about this, that, in fact, she says that she's not going to do a second term. Now, a lot of people think, honestly, and I'm curious what your speculation is, that she isn't looking so good lately.
No, she's not. And I think this job is literally killing her.
And I think that she's just came another 4 years. I mean, something, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm going to be an old bat, and I don't think you can do in your mid-60s what you could in your mid-40s. And I remember her when she was in her mid-40s. So that's a very big sort of change that's going on. Some other interesting data. Well, we have the situation. The Pentagon is also saying that in terms of what there was another hearing today. There was a hearing yesterday, I think we talked about, but another hearing today about Afghanistan, very much the same kind of thing, what's going to happen in Afghanistan, that we're going to try and pull out troops and various people saying, look, the Taliban is going to make their spring offensive. So that is actually not terribly news. One thing that that also came up today, and usually I try and sort of give you a little heads about what I'm talking about. I forgot to tell you about this, but they are now trying to figure out a way of doing biometric screening so that this trusted traveler program that they originally had it, but now the way they had it initially is that all you had was your fingerprints. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't work. People were reading a lot of newspapers. They got ink. You couldn't get a good print.
Right.
But now they're thinking of doing other biometric data. People would give their card if they had their trusted screening program, and they'd be able to deal with it. So that's the other big news, and they're trying to get this through, and they're saying that they actually think that the Democrats and Republicans might actually work on that. President is also going to Brazil on Friday. And so he's making a pretty big trip on that front. But I think the Hillary Clinton news is interesting because that puts the president in a terrible position in terms of what is he going to do next. Where's he if he does get a second term, which I actually believe he's going to, because the Republican challengers are looking worse and worse day by day.
Yeah, I think Conyers is right. If they had a reasonable challenger, he might be in trouble. I just don't think they're going to muster a reasonable candidate.
I mean, look at the field.
Like I said last week, Newt Gingrich seems to be one of the front runners, kind of. And, my wife didn't buy the whole, I love my country and I work so hard, that's why I cheated on you angle. I don't know that the American people are going to buy that either.
Oh, they're definitely not going to buy it. And, I want to say something. I still have a lot of confidence in my friend Haley Barbour. I don't agree with him on anything, and he has said some horrible things, and his press secretary turned out to be a loser of the 10th power. But I think that don't count him out.
I think
he can win against Obama? No, but don't count him out as a nominee or VP nominee.
Yeah, I'm going to count him out because he's got ex-McCain people giving him advice. So,
well, I got to say something, though. He does have ex-McCain people. But, it is interesting, and people have been quoting the McCain folks. And when McCain was running with Hillary Clinton, there was a forum in Washington where they had all of their financial advisors, and Mark Zandi was there, and of course he was McCain's financial advisor. And I listened to them all, and I said, this Zandi guy is the smartest guy I've ever heard on finance. Well, it turns out he's much more in the Democrats' court these days. But Zandi was one of McCain's advisors, who had McCain won, at least we would have had somebody with a brain in their head on his campaign. It may have been the only one in McCain's campaign, but it would have been somebody.
At the end of it, it came down to, did I really want Sarah Palin one heartbeat away from of sitting in the big chair with a guy who was in his 70s as the guy holding that chair? And the answer was no.
I totally agree with you.
Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Talk Radio News Service. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. And now to find out what is going on in Harrisburg. What do you got for us tonight, Jay?
A recent article in the Harrisburg Patriot, Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission hires Roger Nutt as CEO. Now, he's a former transportation official and the father of a top advisor to Governor Tom Corbett. He's going to be hired as the CEO of the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission. He's 70 years old. He was appointed to head the agency that oversees the 545-mile toll highway. He starts next Monday. Nutt is the father of Corbett's top political advisor and former chief of staff, Brian Nutt, who left Corbett's administration shortly after the November gubernatorial election. His salary will be about $196,700. From what I understand, what is leaking has leaked out since. He offered the job to his son Breyer, to Nutt's son Breyer. There's accusations even from the Republican Party that that's a bit of a cronyism. I mean, the governor did run on the platform of being a reformer, a different kind of governor than the former governor, more transparency. But some of the Republicans are saying, that the taste, it tastes a little funny. There's just touch cronyism. And stay tuned on that. I mean, when you think about it, Rick, it's hard to believe that there wasn't someone qualified that lived in the state. This man's coming from Florida, by the way. He's 70 years old, coming from Florida. It's hard to believe that there isn't someone in Pennsylvania that he could give it to, provide a job. Yeah, I know it's only one job, but, the fact that he went out of state just doesn't sit right with a lot of people, and apparently there's Republicans within the party that have reacted negative on that.
Do I smell cronyism?
I believe one could very much describe it as cronyism. All in the family, if you will. By any other description, cronyism is still cronyism, and it doesn't sit well, especially with some of the more conservative members of the party. So stay tuned. There may be some further developments in that. Another very relevant article. This goes directly to the governor's budget in the Harrisburg Patriot. State budget cuts to students in poor districts could be 10 times higher. Let me repeat that. State budget cuts to students in poor districts could be 10 times higher than those in wealthier districts under his proposals. What are we talking about? In some cases, cuts per student at urban schools would be 10 times higher than their wealthier neighbors. For instance, locally, under Governor Tom Corbett's proposed budget, it would mean that Steele High School District would get about $1,139 less from the state for every student, or the equivalency of about $28,477 less for a class of 25. That's even though the district has a poverty rate of, believe it or not, Rick, 68.2%. That's very high. And already has a tax rate of 4.3 mills, the second highest in Dauphin County after Harrisburg School District. In contrast, Derry Township, which you know, comparatively is a very affluent school district, with a poverty rate of only about 12.3, they would get $121 less per student from the state, or $3,030 less for a class of 25, with a tax rate of about 16.99 mils. Harrisburg, on the other hand, cuts would come to about $1,026 per student. York, about $1,545 less. Now, according to the superintendent of Steele High Schools, Audrey Utley, her one explanation, and I think she's right on, that's sad. Corporate R outlined a budget that would cut about $1.1 $8 billion from public education, including basic education money and accountability block grants for at-risk students. In addition, we are less able to go to our tax base to make up the difference, according to a spokesman from Steele High. We've already asked a half-mil tax increase, but that won't come close to making up the $1.5 million we are losing. Again, he made this tax pledge, and it was big. I'm not going to raise taxes. And we start seeing almost on a daily basis, Rick, situations where school districts and individuals are stepping up and saying, well, wait a minute. You know, the governor, you're not really being honest with the people. The taxpayers of Pennsylvania, especially at the school level, are going to be paying big increases. And some of these school districts are just going to have to drop programs, as we've described here with Steele High. They're going to just going to have to stop some of these basic programs, which are an intricate part of the education. I mean, this budget is going to be a disaster, Rick.
I absolutely agree. A couple of quick emails I want to get to before we take a break. Again, you can email me, Rick, at therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Bob writes, he sent me this article, and I appreciate it. Evidently, tomorrow there's going to be a hearing in Wisconsin. Turns out Dane County District Attorney Ismail Ozane has made allegations in a lawsuit today that the Republicans, though, they didn't follow the rules. The prosecutor says Republican lawmakers violated the state's open meetings law when they amended a contentious plan that bars most public employees from collective bargaining. Walker signed the bill into law last Friday. So now you've got two challenges saying, look, Republicans who controlled the entire process chose to do it the wrong way, chose to ram it down the throats of the people, basically sending that message. So tomorrow should be interesting. We're going to keep up on that. Thank you, Bob, for sending me that. Also, Helen sent me an email, again, Rick at therickssmithshow.com, talking about the 11-year-old girl who was raped in Texas. She writes, this is the way the law used to be in 1975, from 1975 in Pennsylvania, because the law was changed to allow sex with girls age 11, because before that, 16 was jailbait age until 1990, when Senator Opaque started a discussion to re-raise the age of consent. It was allowed thanks to men in the legislature. This is not until the feminists started clamoring for protecting young people, both female and male, that the age of consent was changed upward in Pennsylvania. Oh, there's a little history lesson. Thanks so much, Helen. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
Drowning in crafted lies. Save the USA. USA has resumed the taxes by. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the
Saving Work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad you do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to place your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Fidelity Investments did a big poll, and we've talked about it for a couple of days now. But 58% of the millionaires said that they didn't feel wealthy until they began to, you know, have some money put in their pockets, about $1.75 million of investable assets, which mean they had some pretty good coin. The poll also showed that, you know, millionaires are starting to feel a little more optimistic about the future. Looking ahead to the fourth quarter, they were asked, you know, how do you feel about that? And they saw a dramatic positive increase for the folks who are millionaire class. So I guess it's good for them. I don't know how it's going to help us, but we shall soon see. Reuters reported that nearly three quarters of people seeking health insurance in the U.S. In that individual market that the Republicans want to push us all into. See, you should go out and buy your own. See, you know, everybody go get their own insurance. Well, in recent years, they have faced major roadblocks or were turned down due to prior medical conditions, according to a report released today. The report was released by the Commonwealth Fund. It is a healthcare advocacy group. They said 71% of the estimated 26 million people who tried to buy health insurance on the individual market in the previous 3 years had problems finding it and purchasing it. About 35% say they were turned down or charged higher premiums because of their medical history. A majority of Americans obtain health coverage through their employers still. The study by the Commonwealth Foundation Fund conducted research and advocates for health care reform. Look, they're saying about 52 million people right now are without medical coverage. 52 million. That compares Now, understand, in 2001, we had about 38 million. Massive amounts of people who are being kicked off their policies, losing their jobs, losing their health insurance, and struggling to get by. And just because you have health insurance doesn't mean that you're going to get the care you need. And I don't know how many sports fans saw this story today, but according to the AP, 7 years ago, a former Los Angeles Clippers coach, he was the head coach, Kim Hughes, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And, you know, say what you want, they would not pay for his surgery. And up until Tuesday afternoon, the only functional knowledge that this reporter had of the former Los Angeles Clippers head coach was that he was, in fact, a former Clippers head coach. And that he once touched his elbow to the rim in a layup line at the high school tournament in Illinois. But you know, here's a different part of this. This guy had insurance. Diagnosed with prostate cancer. The league wouldn't cover it. So three of his players pitched in and paid the $70,000 medical bill. Is that what we're... Is that the kind of country we want to be? Just asking. Just asking. Anyway, I mean, what do you think of that, Jake? I mean, the reality is you're talking about a major sports franchise.
He's still coaching.
No, not now.
He's retired.
Yeah, he was the head coach. He was years ago. But you know, again, you know, he's just now coming out and saying, hey, look, you know, this is what happened to me. And, you know, good for him. The players, actually it was four players. Corey Maggett, Marco Jarek, Chris Kamen, and Elton Brand. The only one I've heard of is Elton Brand.
Elton Brand plays for the Sixers now.
Yeah. But you know, look, they ponied up to 70 grand to help their coach out. And, you know, I look at this and I go, isn't this what insurance is for?
You would think the league would have insurance or at least offer a group rate. You would think.
Well, you know, you would think that the NFL, would cover their injured workers when they get hurt. But when you get hurt in the NFL, you go on regular workman's comp. Mm-hmm. Like anybody, like a construction worker, like a, you know, a dock worker, like anybody.
And you know what? I hear the other argument. Exactly what we were talking about. I heard the argument today, believe it or not. Well, you know, these players, I don't know, they make awful good money, and boy, wouldn't you and me like to be making $2 million a year? But they don't have all their facts straight. They don't realize that the average career, I think, is less than 3 years.
Yep.
The last I saw. They don't realize that things like workman's comp aren't even covered by these people.
And what's amazing to me is, you know, you look at workman's comp, and I think workers' comp is a completely broken system. It needs to be completely overhauled, which the Republicans want to do. Republicans absolutely want to overhaul
it.
They want to make it worse than it already is. To me, you know, it was... Think about this. You know, in order to work in this country, you have to give up your right to sue in the event that you're injured. That's the compact that you've made with your employer, that you will give up your right to sue them in return for if you get injured, that you'll be taken care of. Well, that compact has been broken years and years ago, if it ever existed. And the reality is the more we put these pro-business people into place, the worse that compact gets.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, you keep listening to the pro-business side. Look, corporate America's got all their mouthpieces. You don't think Rush Limbaugh makes $50 million a year because he's standing up for the downtrodden and the underclass, do you? No. And he's very honest about it, and you got to give him credit for honesty, and I do. He said he's the defender of corporate America. Understand what that means. That means he doesn't give a rat's behind about you. He cares about them. You know, Glenn Beck doesn't make $32 million a year because he cares about, you know, that the worker at the fast food joint or the guy swinging the hammer or driving a truck. Doesn't care about that. Cares about those advertisers who are putting coin in his pocket. You know, and that's our problem. Our media has been too consolidated.
I have to take exception. I think the workman's comp system worked when corporate America wanted it to work. And, of course, you know why they wanted it to work, because initially, before there were workman's comp laws, individual workers were suing these corporations when they got hurt on the job. And they were winning. And they were winning huge settlements. And the corporate America said, well, we can't have this. So we'll come up with a no-fault plan. We'll agree to take care of your costs, but you can't sue. Well, over the years, you still can't sue, but the workman's comp laws have been watered down. And by the way, in Pennsylvania, up till the 90s, we had a strong workman's comp law. Not once, but twice, it was watered down. Reformed.
Yeah, and I love that.
Hold your ankles when they say the word reform.
But you know, Scott Conklin was here last night, and he said that a couple of times, that he's a reformer. And when I hear that, I kind of cringe at the word reform, because generally reform to me, when I hear people say, I'm a reformer, that basically means, like you said, grab your ankles and hope there's no sand in the Vaseline. Coming out of the mouth of someone like Scott Conklin, I feel a little better assured. But you listen to the insane right. You listen to the Metcalfs of the world. He wants to reform, how we hire people. He wants to reform how we do a lot of things, and none of it good. None of it good whatsoever. If you missed any portion of the program, I want to make sure this. I want to emphasize the podcast. It's there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, your convenience. If you did miss any part of it, be sure to download that. Also, we'd love your feedback. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do enjoy the interaction. And that's kind of the whole reason that I do this program, because I really do. I do love the debate. I love the discussion. And when we had the guy who disagreed with me call in earlier, which I love having those, it tests your world of beliefs. Now, I wish that, he would have had something to say other than talking points. I gave him the time to make his talking points, and then you moved along. But at the end of it, I do enjoy the discussion.
You had three phone calls kind of backed up. It would have been interesting to see where he would have gone if we would have let him on a little bit. I find calls like his, I find them very interesting. You find out what kind of ideas are out there. And the sad part about it is, we disagreed with him, Rick, but there's a good number of people in this area that would probably agree with him, unfortunately.
Well, it's because it's what you hear. And now you find out that that Citadel is being bought up by Cumulus. Number two is buying number three. And now you're talking about the radio market consolidating even further. To me, that's scary stuff. Anytime I hear the outlets of messaging being consolidated into fewer and fewer hands, I worry. There's a reason Rush Limbaugh is on 660 stations, because Cumulus and Citadel and Clear Channel own all the stations. It's pretty simple stuff. I'm in favor of going back, undoing Bill Clinton's destruction of the media with the telecom bill of 96 and putting stations like this one. And I think the folks here at this station do a fantastic job, and you should thank them for putting us on the air. And even if you don't like us, you should tell them, hey, they're on, and I like it or I don't like it, whatever, but you should tell them. Because I think what they're doing is important to the community. I think it's important to this country, and I think more people should have the opportunity, and more stations should be owned by individuals instead of corporations. That's simple in my mind.
Well, one thing about that call, I think his name was Tom, I believe. I wish we'd have more of them, because there are some common. We do have common ground.
Maybe tomorrow night. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a good night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Kyle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street.